9 the game, the midday show with Andy and Randy with you here on a happy hour Friday. Thank you so much for being with us. Like we mentioned, may have heard yesterday, mention again, no Randy today, no Randy next week on a tropical beach vacation with his lovely wife celebrating her birthday. So Abe will be in with us today and all of next week as well. So kind of cool to just kind of keep it in the in-house. The four of us normally work together. Now it'll just be the three of us for the next week and a half. Good morning to you, Abe. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It's a Friday. It just, there's something about waking up on Friday. I mean, we all know what it is, but like, yeah, feels good, man.
Yeah. It's a happy hour.
Happy Friday.
It's a happy hour Friday. There's a huge football weekend ahead of us. The weather's good. Still cold, but good. Better than it was yesterday. Going to be getting warm. It'll be 85 by next Thursday. So for all the people that were mad about the cold, it'll warm up for you. But yeah, man, like last Saturday was the Saturday that had been circled on the college football calendar since before the season started, and it delivered. Like it was awesome. Almost all of the games last Saturday were fantastic. The Saturday before that was fantastic. Almost every Saturday so far in college football this season has been. And I would say, you know, as much as we're sort of still figuring out the new world of realignment and 12-team playoff and all that stuff, the 12-team playoff, I really have no idea how it will affect the totality of the season. Thus far, it hasn't affected my ability to enjoy it at all. But realignment has made it better. Like, Oregon and Ohio State played last week in a conference game that would not have been played if they were not in the same conference. Texas and Georgia are playing tomorrow evening in a conference game that would not be played if they were not in the same conference. I mean, these are, in a normal season, like the games of the year, and we get them every single weekend now. So, I don't know. I'm for it. It's been very fun to have so far. It'll obviously be more fun for Georgia fans if Georgia beats Texas tomorrow night. But, I mean, for me, just this midway through this first kind of new frontier of college football, it's made it a lot more fun on a week-in, week-out basis.
I think if someone's looking for, like, where it will stop being fun or where it will impact, there will be some conference title games that maybe don't mean what they once did. But you've really got to search hard. I mean, we just talked about me not having fun. But you really got to look real hard.
If somebody was going to be the guy to show us what's not going to be fun, you'd be the one.
Not me.
You'd be the one to chime in with it.
Not when it comes. Well, I wouldn't say that. But
I'll tell you what's not fun. Okay. Tell me.
Both of these losing teams going to the title turn. No, it's fine. The thing about the past couple of weeks compared to today is this Georgia-Texas game is about one game. We had a whole week of big games. And yes, it was Oregon-Ohio State, but there are other games that made that day important. You think of maybe Alabama-Tennessee kind of creeps into that discussion, too.
Great game.
Maybe. I don't know what either team is anymore. And I think that's what makes it interesting.
The matchup, I mean.
Yeah, of course. Would this game feel different, bigger, if Georgia had beaten Bama?
Yeah.
It'd have been 1-2, probably, mm-hmm. or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if both teams were undefeated, obviously, I mean, that's kind of the only way I feel like it would have any more juice, I suppose. Although, there's a counter to that, which is, okay, Georgia has one loss.
Yeah, there's a...
That's an uneasy feel. Desperation, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what two losses does to them at the end of the season. I don't know if that's an elimination. It probably isn't. That's also under the assumption that they would win every other game.
Ole Miss
for the
and Bama puts you out.
Yeah, like, I mean, like that's a big if they're able to do that. Obviously, winning the game goes a long way as well. So yeah, if they were both undefeated, there probably would be a little bit more juice because then it would be 1-2 as opposed to 1-5. But Maybe it would be.
I'm not sure. Idea of Georgia having something to prove, mm-hmm. like us having questions. And it's not about whether they win a specific game or not. I'm talking about like season long questions about what this team is and what they can be. Like there have been years past where they may have lost a game in the regular season or at the SEC tournament, and we said, look, this feels like a team capable of winning national championship. I don't know if I'm there right now.
Yeah.
No, they can get me there on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I'm not there right now. It's the first time in 5 or 6 years under Kirby that I felt that way.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, which is this is the first time mid-season with a Georgia team probably since 2020, since the COVID year. And honestly, I don't know, maybe 21 because they hadn't done it yet, and we didn't know what that team really was at this point of the year. You had a good sense of it, but still not sure yet because, I mean, Stetson Bennett was... Anyway, I'm with you. It's the first time in a while, first time they've been underdogs in 50 games. It was the first time in a while that you've gone into a game like, okay, they might not be better than the team that they're playing.
I've in fact seen nothing on the field that would lead me to believe that they are.
Yeah.
It's all the idea of what we believe they can and could be keeps them in the discussion.
I don't think I'm quite there with everybody with Texas.
Because of who they played?
I think that they're good. I think that they've been able to fly under the radar a little bit because of some of the other big things that have happened this year. The fact that they haven't played anybody.
What's the best offense they played? Like 70th?
Yeah.
Worse?
UTSA is probably the best offense that they've played.
80th?
Quinn Ewers looked okay last week in his first start back against Oklahoma. Didn't look great. He looked okay, but again, they won 34-30.
I think there was rust early, and they stopped taking chances.
Definitely.
Because Oklahoma wasn't going to score. They just closed up the offense.
I also think that they've benefited from a couple of different storylines, sort of keeping them in the conversation, but they haven't mattered that much, like Arch Manning taking over and being the quarterback while Quinn Ewers was hurt. Playing well, but there being no controversy there. It was sort of just, that's kind of cool. Let's watch. That's what's next. This is great. But they've been able to sort of exist as one of these best teams because they made the playoff last year. They had that great game early against Michigan, who I think people now understand is not anything close to what they were.
We knew they weren't what they were last year. We still didn't know how far they were from
that. They
didn't
know how, right, exactly. They didn't know how quite far they had fallen from what they were last year. I think you know that now. Very clearly, Oklahoma isn't very good, and you saw that last week. So again, I'm not saying that I don't think Texas is really good, and I think they're deserving of being the number one team in the country right now. I think Oregon could make a pretty strong case for that as well, having that win against Ohio State, certainly significantly better than anybody that Oregon's played, than anybody that Texas has played. But I'm not convinced that they're head and shoulders above the rest of the pack. And I'm also just not convinced that in games like this, when games like this are played between teams that are similarly talented, and these are elite teams, right? These are both elite teams. The better coach usually wins. Like, Georgia's been better than Alabama at times. Nick Saban's a better coach than Kirby, and Nick Saban won. Like, Ohio State has been better. I mean, there's been different times where Ohio State is more talented than Michigan over the last couple of years, and Michigan won because Harbaugh's a better coach than Ryan Day. I guess Lanning's a better coach than Ryan Day. Maybe Ryan Day is just not a very good game-managing coach.
Lanning had some bungles in this game,
too. He did. He absolutely did, which is why I'm not ready to go that far with him, but I'm also incredibly biased with him, so my opinion is probably a little bit jaded. But I just think Kirby is
2 years ago, we were asking if Sark could handle the SEC. Like, this was a real discussion recently.
I know. The Sark conversation has been so interesting to me. Because it's just kind of been in the background because they had a really good year last year.
Right.
Although, you know, there were some moments that were questionable, and they lost to Oklahoma and shouldn't have, and didn't play particularly well in the college ball playoff game, although they made it interesting in the end. But I think people are now seeing that's what Kalen DeBoer does. That's what Kalen DeBoer teams do. I'm not there yet with Sark. I think he's a very good program builder. I think he's done a really good job putting the right people around. Obviously, they've done a good job filling out that roster. I just think if it comes down to an Ohio State-Oregon type situation where there's 90 seconds left in the game and you got to manage right, you got to call the right timeouts, and you have to be savvy and on your P's and Q's, I trust Kirby more than I trust Sark.
Well, Dan Lanning going public takes away part of the savviness possibility.
Can't go 12 men on the field on purpose
anymore. I told you at the time, like, don't claim it. Don't take the props for it. You might be able to do it again. Now you can't do it again. The other thing, would this be a bigger win for Texas than Oregon's win over Ohio State? Like, how would you compare those two road losses? Ohio State, Oregon, and then if Georgia were to go in?
I think it's bigger for Oregon because Oregon hadn't done that yet. Well, okay. I guess Texas hasn't either. Texas hasn't really done that yet.
They were
in the playoff last year, yeah. It would go a long way in terms of validating where people have them right now, right? Like, if Texas does win this game, especially if they win it kind of convincingly, like, I don't think anybody's blowing anybody out. I think what happened in the first half against Alabama was, you know, it happened.
It was a snowball.
But I don't see that happening. But if Texas is able to win this game by, like, 10 or something like that and really look dominant, then it's like, all right, Georgia's kind of out of the mix this year. Texas is one of those teams. Maybe.
I have a tough time, even if they lose on the road, putting Georgia out of the mix.
I think it depends on how it looks.
It's just what we've been told.
It depends on how it looks.
I know. It's been what we've been told for how many months now about this being another shot at the title.
Yeah.
That just, I have a tough time putting them in a different category.
If they can't tackle again, and if guys are dropping passes, and the run, I don't know.
Everything seems fixable and addressable. That's the thing, is we're waiting to see if Georgia can bring that best
effort. Exactly. And if it's the same stuff, that's the reason why they lose this game, then I think you kind of do have to take them out of the mix a little bit. Not to say they can't make the playoff with two losses, but again, two losses at this point of the season, it's kind of going a long way to just assume they're not going to lose again. So, yeah, there's a lot baked into this one for sure. I think it's going to be a great game. We got a lot of time to talk about it throughout the day today. We'll come back. We'll get into what's trending here on a Happy Hour Friday. This hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today, and start packing. Thanks for being with us. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's been great for me just having the front row seat of watching Zach develop into what he's doing and having really a chance to go implement how he believes and how he thinks. And also really when you get put in those positions, it's really to be able to teach your coaches and to be able to show your coaches how you think. And I think those combination of those things are all a part of about being a leader. And then also having a chance to be a young coach and having a bunch of ideas, but being able to listen to other people within that same framework.
Yeah, that's Raheem Morris yesterday talking about Zach Robinson, the offensive coordinator, and the growth that has taken place over the first month and a half of this season. It's pretty clear that that has happened. I think it's also pretty obvious that it would and why it has. We were talking about this before the show. You kind of go back and look at week one. It wasn't a good game plan. I think you kind of understand maybe where they were coming from in terms of trying to protect a quarterback coming off of an Achilles and all of that sort of stuff. But the thing you give them credit for is, okay, bad game plan didn't work. They didn't stubbornly try to go back to it and say, no, we're smart. This just didn't work for this reason. They said, nope, all right, bad. We got to go back to what Kirk does best. He looks fine. We got to try to do what he does best and what I do best, which is play call from 11 personnel as opposed to 12, which they did a lot of.
What if
they
had actually won that game?
I still think
it's almost a slight blessing in disguise that was a loss.
I don't know. I wouldn't go that far, but I think the way that it looked from an offensive standpoint might be a little bit of a blessing. Like, all right, don't do that again. I'm not going to try any more of that. I don't know how much pistol's been ran since week one.
To be fair, we killed them on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everyone did. Not just you, not just me. I mean, they heard it.
Yeah, and I don't remember really killing them. I just remember being like, that was weird. I don't get it. Like, that was a really weird decision to make. Is that what they're going to do? Is something wrong with Kirk? And then now you've seen it evolve, and it's like, okay, really what it was they just didn't know because they hadn't seen him, which you can kill him for that, I suppose, because they could play, but they don't play and all that. So they really didn't know what it was going to look like because they had never seen him in that offense with his Achilles recovery and all that sort of stuff. So I get the idea of this will protect him. But, yeah, it didn't work. It was bad.
No, it was. But now, really now you've had 5 weeks of development, of evolution, of forward steps. How close do we think this offense is to being the absolute best it can be? I'm not sure they're that far off.
I'm not sure. I think there's a few factors. Like they're definitely getting close.
Right.
I think we need to see
more balance
against a good defense.
Sure.
And it's just going to be a while until we see that. Like, and this, look, you play the teams you play, you take advantage of the weaknesses they have. Tampa clearly was decimated in the middle of that defense from a safety perspective, and they threw the ball over the middle a million times, and they couldn't stop the pass. You take what they give you, and they did a great job with that. Last week, Carolina's just not good, obviously. They had the run game going, and they fed it, and it decimated them. The Seahawks aren't particularly good either. They can't stop the run. Attack what they can't do, and then hopefully it'll open up everything else. But we were talking about this earlier in the week. Like, I feel like you have a few weeks before you get there. You're playing defenses that aren't particularly good, so you'll continue to get sharp, build relationships, get on the same page. When you play Denver mid-November, that's the one where I'm like, all right, you're about 10 games in, more than 10 games in. That's a pretty good defense. Let's see where the balance is at. Let's see what they can do against those guys. But look, if they go out and score 35 points every single week, it's hard to say that they're not the best version of themselves. But I think looking closely at it.
Is it time to start the are the Falcons peaking too early on offense discussion? Is that where we're headed?
I think you can start that. I'm not going to go there quite yet. What I will say is talking to a handful of folks on Seattle radio and podcasts and stuff like that the last couple of days, like they're not confident. Like they're kind of doomed in terms of their feeling regarding this football team. Like three losses in a row is pretty bad. The way they've come and who they've come against, this is a, outside of the Lions, that the Lions put 42 on them. This is the best offense they've played this season. There's ugly potential on Sunday, and a pretty potential from a Falcons perspective, but there's ugly potential for what this might look like against the Seahawks defense.
It also feels like for Seattle, like 3-4 is so different than 4-3 at this point in the season. And by the way, for Atlanta, like 5-2 and the discussion and that tier and that group that you start to belong to at 5-2 is also way different than it is at 4-3. And this one feels big to me if you're trying to join that group, the Lions, the Vikings, I guess the 49ers, although record-wise maybe not there. If you're trying to keep up with those guys, you have to win this game at home.
Yeah. This is the time of the season where you've kind of gotten some of the wrinkles ironed out and you can start to really click. And when you are a good team, because it's been a while, but when we've covered good Falcons teams – this is the time of year where they rattle off wins. This is the time of year where you go, like, you win 7 out of 10 games. You might start a little clunky because it's early, and then you get back in division later, and you go on the road and all that at the end of the season. But this is the portion of the schedule. Like, getting through the first 4 games, 2-2,
yeah,
felt miraculous.
It doesn't.
And then taking advantage of the last two the way that you have has been fantastic. This is the part of the, this is the meat of the schedule where you should be able to eat.
It feels like in previous years, sometimes the Falcons' success would creep up on you and almost take you by surprise, a little bit shocking. I think because of the expectations coming in, you almost, I kind of put them in that category ahead of time. And so for them to actually be doing it on the field, it's not going to catch me by surprise if they start to rattle off wins and they do find themselves, I don't know, competing for the number one seed or number two seed in the NFC. It's what they should be doing. It's still nice to see.
It is. I'm not there.
I know.
I can't.
I'm also just,
I would love to get there. I'm not there. The way I would get there is start having some defensive performances where you're cleaning up some of the issues. It's interesting because we're so hyper-focused, and I understand why, because we have been for years, and it's the worst it's been, on the pass rush. Run defense isn't great either. And that's where the coaching staff seems to really be focused. We got another explanation for how sacks could happen yesterday from Jimmy Lake. He was like, all right, we got to be better on first and second, get him in third and longs, and then we'll be able to get home. They could get a sack on first down if they pass the ball, but we're not doing that yet. We're not there, I guess.
They could, though.
You know that, right? Like, we always talk about you have to get into third and manageable on offense.
I've been told it's within the rule
set. You can pick up a first down on first down. You can get a sack on first down or second down. It doesn't have to be 3rd and 13, but maybe I'm getting too greedy. Randy went on vacation. He knew he wasn't going to have to back it up on Monday, saying they're going to get 4 sacks on Sunday. If he's right, sign me up. But
should we call him on Monday if he's right?
No, let's not do
that. No, okay.
I don't even know if we could, honestly, where they're going.
Yeah, you got modern technology. They'll find a way. The thing about the Seattle is they're very good at punching the ball in the end zone with the running backs. The yardage totals are not overly impressive. Like, this does feel like a team, and obviously we know that Geno is the leading passer in the NFL through 5 weeks or 6 weeks, whatever it is. So you're going to have to deal with that. But, like, this feels like a run defense you actually – or rushing offense you can have success against. I know the names are a little scary, and people think Michael Walker's an outstanding back. I like him a lot, too.
Ken Walker.
Charbonnet. Michael Walker, old linebacker. He was run the ball too.
Yep.
Kenneth Walker, Zach Charbonnet as well. Mm-hmm. But like, their totals aren't overly impressive this year.
Mm-mm. And the reason Geno's leading the league in passing is because they can't run the ball.
Right.
Like they have to. They've also been in games the last couple of weeks where they kind of need to throw to get back in it or stay in it. I mean, you go back and look at that Lions game. That was a shootout. A lot of yards came from that. So I think there's a lot of a lot of ingredients for some of the stuff we want to see from the Falcons on Sunday. And obviously, I have very high expectations for the offense, and I expect the offense to stay similar to where they've been.
We're kind of checking off a box,
right? We might
be able
to see some of the stuff that we're looking for on defense.
Like, we're checking off a box slowly, little by little. Like, last week, what do we want to see? The run game develop into a more sustainable so Kirk doesn't have to throw for 450 yards.
Yeah.
Saw that last week.
The week before that, it was get in some rhythm, get Kyle Pitts involved.
Yeah.
We did that. What is it this week? What's the box?
I think because of, as we just laid out, because of the matchups, the run D.
Okay.
Like, this team can't go for a $175 on you. Mm-hmm. And if you do, you're probably in trouble.
If they do, yeah, that's where this game
so
gets
So can
dicey.
You keep it to 120 or lower mm-hmm. as a unit? And then the week after that, pass rush.
Riding to ball. After they trade for somebody, hopefully. Riding to Ballsy is going to join us in about 10 minutes to talk Georgia Bulldogs. Here's Kirby talking about the pressure of this game after having already lost to Alabama.
Well, whether it's about the playoffs, whether it's about the SEC championship, whether it's just about being a competitor, there's pressure in every game. And there's pressure in every game you play in the SEC. This one, no different. It's an opportunity for us to go show who we are and go play a really good football team. So I think you're blessed when you play at Georgia and you play in these kind of games. And our guys will look at it that way.
Pressure's a privilege, Abe. That's what they say. I mean, there's definitely more pressure because they already lost to Alabama.
Right.
It's just the reality of it. We can have the discussion on the back end as far as what it means if they are 5-2 coming out of this week for the playoff and all that. Pretty easy way to curb that is just to go down there and win. Go down there and beat Texas and sort of reinstate some of that confidence that everyone had in you preseason. It is a little bit, look, it is what it is, but it's a little bit unfortunate that all of these litmus test games are road games.
Right.
Going to Tuscaloosa, going to Austin, and then having to go to Oxford later in the year. Look, but it is what it is.
You'll get Tennessee at home later.
Yeah.
But yeah, the thing for me is it is obviously about this game, but I think this is also about the whole season. You mentioned reinstilling some confidence. I think there's some belief that was lost against Alabama that this team can win a national championship. But if you go on the road at Texas and beat the current number one ranked team, I think you kind of put that Bama loss in the rearview mirror. You start to maybe kind of play into the, we got off to a terrible start, it unraveled, we fought our way back, didn't happen, but that second half, Bama was the Georgia team, and
right.
what we did in Austin is the Georgia team,
right.
and we still can get what we need to get.
Right. That's the interesting part about that Bama game is there was a time during that game, like early third quarter, where I was like, you know, all this talk about maybe these teams are going to play again. Maybe they'll play two more times. Like, I don't want to see these two teams play again. This isn't interesting. Like, there's nothing interesting about this game. And then Georgia put their foot on the gas and came back and was like, okay, here's that team that we knew they were and that we had been looking for all night. And then so you're in this weird spot of like, all right, that did happen. The other part happened too. But in order to make it valid, you have to then do it against other teams.
You didn't see second half. The team that Georgia was in the second half against Bama, you didn't see against Auburn.
No.
And you didn't see against Mississippi State.
No, and you didn't have to, but no, you didn't.
But you would have liked to.
Yeah, sure.
You would have liked to. Give you a little more confidence going into this game.
Sure, no doubt about it. The Saints are pretty much out of it, feels like, right? Is that fair to say, Bo?
Pretty fair to say, yes.
2-5, five losses in a row.
What are we playing for? Shadur?
Oh, wow.
Travis Hunter, who's it going to be?
Yeah, I don't. Did they go to the third stringer last night?
Like
Haener?
Super late.
Yeah.
Haener?
Like the last drive of the game. Nobody's playing.
Let's get Haener
now.
In there.
He went 3-4 and threw a touchdown.
The Husky legend.
So now it's going to be start Haener next week. And, you know, maybe they do. Who knows?
Yeah, no, it was pretty brutal last night. That's five losses in a row now for the Saints. They're 2-5. All right. Rodney DeBalsi is going to join us next. We'll get his thoughts on the Georgia-Texas game coming up on Saturday night. He's from UGASports.com. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to MarkSpain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today, and start packing. Don't go anywhere. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Midday show with Andy and Randy with you here on a happy hour Friday. Abe Gordon in for Randy today and all of next week. Hey, as always on a happy hour Friday, if you're out there drinking something, send us a picture of it. We'll give you a shout out on the radio. at TBM929. Maybe you're not drinking it yet. Maybe you're you got it stashed for later on today. That's okay, too. We'll still give you a shout-out. Maybe you're getting ready to head out to Austin. Hopefully you've already left, because we've heard it's pretty crazy trying to get out there. Rodney Nabalsi joins us from UGASports.com, as he always does on Fridays, to talk Georgia Bulldogs. Rodney, how are you?
I'm doing good, man, doing good. A little mystical there, bouncing back, because I'm hoping that's what Georgia does. Not that they lost last week, right. But everybody expects them to get their heads kicked in. So poor old Georgia, if they can actually make it to Austin, you know, they're supposed to get killed by about 70 points from what I understand. So hopefully they bounce back and don't listen to all the negativity.
Yeah, how much do you think – I mean, obviously that's part of it. Kirby's going to get that message across and all the negativity and all that. But, like, how much do you think that will play a factor in sort of positioning themselves as the underdog in this one tomorrow night?
You know, normally I say that stuff's overrated and mm-hmm. stupid. And I've been doing this like 30-something years, and there's always for years we talk about, hey, this was a great week of practice. They feel like they're going to get everybody. I remember I was told that they were going to stomp LSU in 2019.
Yeah.
That didn't work.
No.
But I've also heard there was a bad week of practice. They're just not ready, and they go out and win by 50. So all that kind of, you know, what's the team's mentality, all the stuff like that, we kind of get into it. And I've gotten to the point now where I just don't believe any of it. It's all about turnovers. So it's all about explosive plays. So the way I see it is you got a situation where no matter what their mentality is, if you don't cover Isaiah Bond, well, it doesn't matter if you were all psyched up or together. But maybe, just maybe, this team doesn't really have – we talk about not having identity, but there's a little something missing on this team. It feels like a lot of guys who are really talented doing their job, but you don't see that kind of covering for my brother – taking care of the other guys, that complementary football where the offense takes care of the defense and vice versa. There's just a little bit missing, and maybe a little disrespect, a little underdog mentality kind of pulls them together, and you see a little more, I don't call it sacrifice, but a little more everybody rowing the same way, and you get that complete game that we have not seen this year.
Well, and Roddy, I kind of want to follow up on that, because you talk about the mentality of the Georgia Bulldogs in kind of from that aspect, but from the on-the-field aspect, I mean, quite frankly, I haven't seen anything that leads me to believe that they can go up and down the field with Texas. And I know there's some questions about Texas and what they've proven on the field as well, but is there a chance that this Georgia team simply isn't that talented? Because we've been told otherwise all year long, and we just haven't seen it.
No, they're not as good as they were. I mean, that's point blank. And look at your secondary. You have five guys in the secondary. Georgia plays nickel about 52 to 58% of the time. And you got three of your five guys in the NFL from last year. Now, you replace them with better athletes. I mean, Julian Humphreys is amazing. There's no question about it. But he's not Kamari Lasser. You know, Javon Bullard is not, you know, going to wow you with height and size and speed and all that, but you get a true freshman kind of taking over his spot mm-hmm. in KJ Bolden, but he's new. So Xavier Truss on the offensive line. I mean, he's absolutely a baller, but he's not, you know, Amarius Mims. You know, Amarius Mims was your starter. Carson Beck isn't Stetson Bennett, but they're all really good. You know, these are guys who are going to play in the NFL, but they're a small step down from what you had before. So you're playing with a lot of guys who got beat out by better players in years past, but now they're a year older, better at what they do. But you're right, they haven't really just gone out and curb stomped anybody. Mm-hmm. So I know that they've got the talent to do so, because we've seen the flashes. It would be different if I said, well, we've never seen them do it, so they're just not as good. We have seen them do it. We've seen them when things click. When things click, they can beat anybody. But they can also get down 28-0 when they play poorly. So Kirby talked about after that Kentucky game that this is a resilient team. And he was right. It wasn't just coach speak. They did not fall apart. Mm-hmm. So they have at least that much continuity and congruity in the team. You know, they can pull for each other. But it almost feels like all those guys are on individual islands. And the, you know, N'Kobe Dean, Quay Walker, you know, the Channing Tindall, you know, all those guys kind of, you know, backing up the – guys up front, the secondary making plays when the front line defense had a problem, and the defensive front, keeping those guys in the secondary so unchallenged because they were getting to the quarterback. It just feels like there's a lot of guys working in there. Everybody's doing their own work. You know? Mm-hmm. I don't feel like it's a group project yet. Once they do get that group project, watch out because they'll go ham.
Rodney DeBalsa joining us here from UGASports.com, getting ready for the big matchup tomorrow night between Georgia and Texas in Austin. You mentioned a couple of the position groups that have just kind of been, some understandably replacing a lot of guys, some maybe we were just kind of wrong about where the talent level was going to be. When you look at this matchup with Texas, what's the matchup that worries you most from a how is Georgia going to stop these guys perspective?
Georgia's secondary against those wide receivers. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the fear. It was a fear a few years ago when Georgia got torched by Ohio State, and that's with better players.
Yeah, so, yeah.
It's tough. And I was speaking to people inside the building, and I said, "What needs to happen, you know, for them to really get better?" And the guy who goes to every practice says, "We've got to be more effective up front. We've got to take some of the pressure off of our secondary. We are really putting them out on their own." And when you have a guy like Quinn Ewers who gets rid of the ball, maybe the fastest in the entire country at getting the ball out fast, you're not going to have a lot of time to affect him. So that's a fear of mine. And, you know, a lot of people are like, well, hey, we were told this team's better than they were. I will warn all of your listeners to not listen to the pundits because I'm in the business, and if you on, say, June 6th come out and say, oh, yeah, this team's not as good as they were last year, you are just going to get dragged for an entire month. So a lot of pundits, a lot of reporters put a very big, you know, smiley face on every position when they do their position groups evaluations, and they're like, these guys are world beaters, because it's a lot easier to have people agree with you for 9 months than to actually come out and tell the truth that they've got some issues. Nobody wants to hear that. So a lot of times you get a rosy picture of what the team you have is, but then, you know, people are scratching their head come October, November. I'm not really scratching my head. I mean, I thought that there were going to be some issues here, but I have seen that they have the capability of being really good. But they're not elite. They're not 2021. They're not 2022. They're 2024, and they're a step back, and there's a lot more parity. But Texas has gotten a lot better, especially throwing and catching the ball. So that's why that's my fear of position groups. Like, how's the secondary going to hold up, and will the defensive front be able to affect them at all?
On offense, Roddy, I'm looking at the run game because I've seen two of the last three games that Carson Beck is going for over 4 bills through the air. And you bring in ETN, we all presume for some way or another to be RB1. And with the exception of that one game against Kentucky in which he had 20 touches, it feels like he's been relatively limited. And I know the injuries are probably going to reinforce that this week, but it feels to me like this is a game he should be carrying the rock 20 times.
I think that's a great idea. I thought they were going to do that last week against Mississippi State. Mississippi State was the worst team in the conference by a long shot in stopping the run. And Mike Bobo comes out and throws it almost 50 times. And I went back and I'm like, what is Mike smoking? I mean, what is he chewing in that when they run that dip up there? And I go back and look. I'm like, oh, Mississippi State is also, they give up 75% on pass attempts. So they're the easiest team to throw against. Okay. So sorry, Mike. Didn't mean to second guess you there. I got it. But, yeah, this to me is a perfect time if you can run block. And they've got some great edge guys at Texas. If you can run block and, you know, get behind your pad level, ETN is special. I don't know if I mentioned it last week or week before, but I did in one of my columns. How many positions can you say Georgia's better this year than they were last year?
Right.
The easiest one to go is running back, no mm-hmm. question.
Mm-hmm.
Trevor Etienne is special. Nate Frazier is special. Mm-hmm. If you're running the ball, you're controlling the clock. Quinn Ewers is sitting on the sideline. You know, Isaiah Bond sitting over there. Those running backs are sitting over there. You're controlling the game. And you limit them to – a few games ago, Georgia was only had 8 possessions. You limit Texas to 8 possessions, that's almost a win right there. So I love the idea of running the ball, and ETN is special. You saw that he had 88 yards rushing and then, what, like 50-something receiving, led the team in receptions. So he is such a danger. And I hate to say it, but they're finally using him. Like, I wish they'd ever used James Cook when they had him.
Mm-hmm. How are things looking from an injury standpoint, Roddy, as far as availability tomorrow night?
I've noticed that a couple guys are listed as probable in Jordan Hall and Jared Wilson. If you can get Jared Wilson back, that's big. And again, one of the reasons I don't think this team's really hit its stride is Kirby Smart said after the postgame last week, he says, you know, all of our alpha leaders on the sideline being cheerleaders. Mm-hmm. And he's right. Mikael Williams, you know, first-round draft pick, played 11 snaps last week. Jared Wilson on the sideline. Tate Radledge and all – I think he's unanimous preseason right. All-SEC, sideline. Mm-hmm. Smile Mondon, preseason All-SEC, sideline. Well, he's still going to be on the sideline. Tate Radledge will probably go to the game, but I don't think he'll be ready to go. But getting Jared Wilson back, I mean, that's your starting center. Mm-hmm. Tate Radledge was your backup center. Drew Bobo, who's played well, is your third-string center. So if you can have your starting center out there and you want to run the ball, that looks good. If you can get Jordan Hall out there just to – I mean, he hasn't played all season. Maybe, you know, he gets a few reps. That's good for him. But you really miss not having Tate Radledge. Talk about not being able to run the ball and not having Jared Wilson, the two of them side by side. I mean, that's two out of your three interior linemen. If you can get one on back, that's a huge, huge shot in the arm for Georgia. Mm-hmm.
Roddy, Georgia has the experience of that Alabama game this year. They were in a tight game. They were down and out, fought their way back. Texas has been front-running all season long. How much could that come into play potentially if Texas finds themselves in a battle midway through the third quarter?
It's big. It's big. I started off the show saying I don't believe a lot of the psychoanalysis, but you do see when things go sideways, teams get frustrated. And, again, when – Georgia barely beat Kentucky. You know, Kirby Smart came out of there grinning. You know, he's smiling ear to ear. He's like, my team's resilient. And I'm like, oh, way to put a good face on it. But he was right because we saw when they went to Alabama, they were down 30-7. I was like, I actually said, put in Gunnar Stockton just to change it up, you know, give them a running quarterback to deal with, you know. Or, hey, just fold the tents. Don't get anybody else hurt. Get out of here. Live to fight another day. They fought back to take the lead. So if Georgia starts getting down, you're not going to see guys on the sideline throwing helmets or kicking the football when it's placed to play like you saw with Alabama.
Yep.
They'll be like, okay, we've been in a dogfight before. We've been in a dogfight most of the year, okay, except for maybe the Clemson game, which is looking more and more like a good win. Mm-hmm. But at Texas, if all of a sudden, you know, they're trailing 14-3 or, you know, something like that, they'd be like, hey, you know. And again, they haven't played enough great teams or any good teams really to worry about, you know, they haven't been in a bad position. But, so they'll probably still be expecting things to go right. I don't think that they could fall apart, but just kind of a couple guys dealing, you know, especially in the secondary, you have some guys start blaming each other when Carson Beck slices them up. That can. I don't think you'll see it team-wide, but you can definitely see it position-wide where guys get frustrated and start chirping at each other.
Roddy, we appreciate it as always, man. Enjoy the game tomorrow night.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Roddy Nabalsi there, UGASports.com, every single Friday at 11:40 to get ready for the Georgia Bulldogs game. As big as any, obviously. It's the next one, but it's also against number one on the road. Prime time, Saturday night, with a loss already on your record. So. Maybe bigger than some of the other ones. Fairly sizable. Pretty big.
I don't think you can walk away from this one. I mean, this one means so much more than Alabama because the room for error. You know, at least with Alabama, yep. You had room for error. There's no room for error anymore.
I don't know, man. I don't know when we're going to say what we think, like, outcome-wise. Maybe top of the 1 o'clock hour or whatever. I'm getting closer to where I thought I was going to get to with this game. I don't know, man.
I don't know where that is
for
you.
I don't buy Texas being that. I think they're very good.
I'm going to tell you something in the break that I noticed a week ago, and you can decide if we bring it to air.
I don't know. No, we'll get there. I think Georgia wins this game. I'm there. I think Georgia wins this game. Yeah, but we'll talk about exactly how and by how much as the show goes on. NFL No Huddle coming up next, though. We'll get ready for a big Sunday in the National Football League. Hey, the week... Week started last night. Pretty good for Falcons fans. It's weird to be happy when Sean Payton wins, but when he beats the hell out of the Saints like that, I guess you have to be. We'll be right back. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.